Well, hello and welcome. So what the heck is Jackalope Jam, you ask? What makes this event different from others? And why should I consider adding it to the list of my must-do races? Well, we're hopefully going to try to get you the answers to those questions and maybe more in today's episode. You are, of course, listening to Choose to Endure, the show dedicated to the back-of-the-pack runners, where we share uplifting stories, interviews, gear and training tips specific to the tail-end heroes of the Ultra Universe. My name's Richard Gleave. I have been running Ultras now since 2017, and I've taken on and finished numerous distances all the way up through 220 miles now, as of a couple of weeks ago, and I am unashamedly a member of the back-of-the-pack crew, just like you. Now with me today to talk all things Jackalope is Mr. Chris Trevino. Chris is a local runner here in the Houston area, and he has participated in the Jam for the past 3 years. First one, 24 hours, and the last two, he's been in the 100-hour race. So he has spent some time out at this event and is uniquely positioned to walk us through really what makes this race stand out, what the experience is like, and why you should be doing it. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this.
Discover raw, inspiring stories from runners who've been right where you are. This is the Choose to Endure Ultra Running Podcast. With your host,
he's English, not Australian,
Richard Gleave.
Well, hey, Chris, welcome to the show. Fantastic to have you on. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about the Jackalope Jam. I can't wait. Let's do it.
Yes, sir. Well, I guess we should start at the beginning, really, since that's usually an awesome place to kick things off. For those people out there that might not ever have heard Jackalope Jam or might be in some other part of the country and not come across this race, what is Jackalope Jam? What's the race first? Can we describe kind of what type of race it is and when it's on, and what is the essence of Jackalope Jam?
Yes. So Jackalope Jam is a timed race. So they have different times from 6 hours all the way up to 100 hours. I think this year was the third year of the 100-hour option. And man, it's the community. I mean, that's what stands out to me the most. Is the people make the race. It used to be 1.5, 3/4 of a mile out to a cone that's called the Cone of Death, because you're going to see this cone over and over and over and over, and you're going to want to kick it, knock it down. You're just tired of seeing this cone because you're going out to it and you're coming back, and you're going out and you're coming back. So the Cone of Death is famous. People talk about it all the time. We have people dress up in cone costumes because now it's got a whole image of its own. And so you do that. Well, this last year, the year before, we had a new race director. So in last year, he said, you know what, this trail math after all these hours gets kind of difficult with going 1.5 miles every lap.
Yeah.
So it's like, he changed it to where it's when you're done, it's a mile out and a mile back. Makes it really easy to add up the math. Cause you know, when you get that ultra brain, the math is not fun, right?
Well, that sounds a lot easier. A mile out, a mile back, 2 miles for a loop. Yeah, I'm all for that. Good change,
yes.
Cal. There.
It was, yes, very, very, very good job with that. It also, you know, you're on the course the whole time. Like, well, you don't have to be. That's a whole nother story. But most people put all their tents and their setups on the course, so when you get up, you can hit the trail right away and get out there and get back. And that's a unique part because you're always seeing people. Always. Every day, all the time, you're gonna have someone with you. I think that's really why I said community, because you're always – it's just like, hey, man, I'm fixing to go out. You want to go? Oh, okay. And you go do a loop with someone you might not ever, because of your difference in style of running, ever get to spend time with. And I think that's one of the most unique things that I have really enjoyed about this race.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned you've been doing the 100-hour race, which is barely credible in of itself. And this is the second time you've done, or this year at least, was the second time you've done the 100-hour race. So 100 hours out on this course, going out to the cone, go around the cone and come back and repeat for 100 hours. And that in of itself seems pretty wild. Why do you sign up for the 100-mile race, and how did it go? What was your experience this year?
Oh, my God. So the sign-up has a little backstory to it for me signing up for the 100. So I got into ultras about 2 years ago, just real quick. I got it about 2 years ago, and I had done a 50-miler, and I was looking for something else to do. And I had kind of been, you know, Lisa Decker lives in my area, and we became friends, and she was talking about this race, and I got the FOMO. I was like, I got to see what's going on with this. But 100 hours really scared me. I'm like, I ain't done much. I'm going to sign up for 24. Well, I went and signed up for the 24. While I'm in the weather, it rained the whole time I was there. I was soaked the whole time for the 24 hours. And during that event, this is what got me wanting to sign up for 100. I could see what everybody else was doing. The 100-hour group of people looked like they were the cool high school kids having the great time. And we're over. And I'm like, I want to be a part of that group. I want to be hanging out with those. They just looked, they were having a blast. It was like, and they're doing 100 hours. You know, I'm like, I couldn't wrap my head around it. So I just thought that's what I want to do. I want to try that. And so I did. And then now this being my second year, the experience, you'd think I'd learn from the first year.
Apparently you didn't learn your lesson. After the first 100 hours, you were like, no, that's not quite enough. I need another 100 hours doing this out and back.
I need another one. The people you meet and so much to learn out there. I ultimately did 106 miles this year. But man, that's the 100. That's the hardest, you know, that's the farthest I've ever went. But to do it over that long of a distance, I think Jackalope doesn't get, even in my mind, me being a new person, I didn't give it the respect it deserves. I'm like, oh, 100 hours to do 100 miles? Piece of cake. Let's go do this. And it pretty much slapped me in my face the first day of how, you thought this was going to be easy, didn't you? You were not prepared. And there's so many things that went into it that I had no clue what I was doing out there. I just thought I was just going to run as much as I could, and I'd be getting the 100-mile buckle pretty quickly and easily. I was very, very naive to that, to be honest with you. I really thought that it was going to be a cakewalk.
So for somebody like me who's never done one of these timed races, what was it that sort of slapped you in the face, to quote you? Like, what was it about the race, or what is it about that race that is so challenging?
You need to have really strong mental strength, because I think what this race throw in that a lot of the races don't is you can leave. You can say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go to the store. Hey, you know what? Well, town's about 15 to 20 minutes away, so it's not super close. But you can say, hey, I'm going to go. I have an RV the first year. Well, both years I had my RV there. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go sleep in the RV. Well, you get comfortable, and you said, why do I want to go back on that trail? You know, it's cold out there. It's hot out, whatever is going on. So that little thing in back of your head, I know when you're in a longer race and you're like, you're on the course until it's over. You're up against a clock. Well, this one, you're up against a clock, but it is so long. You start doing a whole different kind of math of, well, yeah, I could sleep for 10 hours, or I could it's almost like it was harder to stay on the course knowing I could be off the course. That was my biggest challenge, I think, and was the mental part of I wanted to be comfortable. I didn't like being uncomfortable. And of course, that's the sport of ultra. You got to learn how to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, it for sure. If you've got your RV there, or if you've got your tent or whatever, however, like your car, if you're sleeping in your car, it seems like it would be really easy and tempting to just jump inside and take a couple of hours, or hang around at the one and only aid station at the start and finish, chatting with people. Yeah, it seems a lot more difficult to keep going. Like, the mental discipline to keep running in amongst all of that. And you know, you're talking, I think, and maybe we'll talk later, but it seems like there's a lot of fun around this event too, while it's happening. So just the discipline you need to keep going if you're trying to sort of make a goal or find a buckle or do something different, I think is pretty interesting on this one. And I don't know that I had really considered it from that angle. I'm like you. I'd be like, well, I'm just going to run. And it's really insidious that you don't have to run. That little thing in your head saying, oh, you can go sit in your car for an hour. And that's 1 hour out of 100. Who cares?
Yeah, big deal. All right.
Big deal over and over again. Yeah. So how did your 100 go this go around? You said you made 106 miles, yes, which is awesome. Was that your goal? Was your goal to go over 100? Or what was your goal? Was that it? And how did the race unfold?
On the first day, there was something unique this year that I like to make a short petition for to the race director. And what happened was the first day was Valentine's Day this year. And I'm out here running a race on Valentine's Day. You know, I don't know, maybe he should scoot this back a little bit, because my wife was very supportive. I love my wife. Very supportive. She supports all these crazy endeavors I do. She actually is my biggest number one supporter, as in motivate and letting me be off and do all these crazy things I love to do. And Jackalope is, you know, my favorite. I did buy her an Apple Watch the day before to kind of hopefully it would make up for me not being there on Valentine's Day while I was racing. And Cal, if you're listening, hey, when we tell our significant others that we love them more than running, it's hard to really put that into context when we're actually at a race on Valentine's Day. So it's hard for them to believe us. So please help us out and maybe just scoot it a little bit. Maybe the next week. I think my 24-hour year was the week before. So maybe that messes with his whole weather thing, making sure he gets the worst weather. I don't know. But being on Valentine's Day was very difficult. I did end up I had a red Bucky shirt that I left for my wife with Valentine's, and I wore a red Bucky shirt so we could kind of be together in that way, which was a kind of a cool thing I got to do for the first day. But, you know, that's my pitch to Cal, is hopefully, I don't know if it'll go anywhere, but who knows? So funny thing. So when you first get there, so it's usually a big group of people that get there first, set up. And this is my first year being in that cool group.
Uh-huh.
Last year I did the 100, but I was kind of in the group, but not really. I was still kind of fresh at it. I'm really kind of shy. I'm an extrovert, but it was weird. So I was kind of shy. I didn't want to, you know, I knew Lisa, but I didn't know her really, really well. So I kind of, Tommy was there, another friend of mine that you know as well. And he was there. So I know these people this time more than I did the first year, but I still kind of felt timid to kind of like be hanging out with them all the time. So I just started meeting all these people. So this year, because I heard before each Jackalope, the 100 hours, people usually go and do a dinner before. So this year I got to be a part of the dinner. I got to go to the dinner. We went to a Mexican restaurant. Like, we set all our tents up and then we left.
So this is participant driven. This is not the race putting on a dinner. This is just you guys.
Correct.
Who show up.
Correct.
The day before. You guys all decided to go out to dinner together.
Yes, yes. And they had done that every year, and I had heard about it. Again, the cool kids. And so I have been wanting, and I kept on telling Lisa, hey, I said, hey, when's that dinner? Well, let's get it together. So got it together. We went, there was about five of us that went out there, and we had dinner and Mexican. And then somebody said, oh, we're going to have margaritas. And so they had some margaritas. So I said, oh, I'm going to have a beer. So, you know, I had a beer. And then I said, are y'all getting another one? And they, well, we might. So I got another one. And so this is the day before, and I am not a big drinker. So here I am, a little tipsy, the night before I'm supposed to start this journey. And so then we start talking about races we're going to do and our goals and everything. So my original goal was, I told Steph, she was someone who was with us at the dinner, and I told her, I said, I think I want to run the first 24 without stopping. That's my first goal. I want to go 24 hours without stopping.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. And she says, that's similar to what I want to do. Maybe I want to do 36. I was like, I don't think I could do that. I said, but I want to try that. Yeah, I'll do something different. And I said, my mileage, I said, maybe 150. Well, so then on the way back, I'm a little tipsy. I told them I have to use the restroom really bad. So on the way back, they dropped me off by the restroom, and I go in. It's a funny story because we get there. I jump into I jump out the car real quick, use the restroom. I come back, and I'm just, you know, I'm all excited, having a good time. I'm just having fun. And the porta potty was kind of unlevel. So while I'm in there, it's kind of going, woo, 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 woo.
Oh, no.
It was doing this, you know, while I'm using the restroom. And when I told them, I said, something's up with that restroom, man. They need to fix it. It's going, woo, woo. So guess what? every time somebody saw me during the race, that was their my calling card. Hey, there goes Chris.
Very cool. That's your trail name, your Jackalope Jam name, I guess.
Yeah, that's my trail name now. So to answer the question, though, my goal was originally 150 miles. That was my goal last year. That was my goal this year. And then after about 13 or so hours, I looked at Stephanie. She looked at me and I said, you know, I don't know about this 24 hours thing. And she goes, yeah, I don't know. Me neither. That's how quickly it gets to you. Like it really, not that this was day one, just X amount of hours into it. And we was already, you know, already, it was kind of warm that the first day. It was kind of warm and it was really, and you go out, you always try to go out slow. But for some reason, I'm just that guy that sometimes I just go out too hard in the beginning. I know I should just kind of lay back and take it easy and kind of work my way into it, but I wear myself out again. And then what happened for me is I'm so extroverted and I love talking to people. I'm talking to people, having a good time. I forget to eat. I forget to drink. I'm so worried about having a good time. That's where I'm trying to find my balance in my ultra career. Basically, you know, if you want to call it a career, is I want to have fun.
Yeah.
And sometimes that overtakes my competition, like my goals. And they start doing this head button thing where, oh, you're not having fun, Chris. If you're worried about all these miles and all these things, how are you going to have fun? So I'm really trying to get that right. So that was the first obstacle, was for me to grind it out and not focus so much on the fun. So that was really my struggle of the first day. The first day, I think I ended up with like 28 or something miles. And then, oh man, I forgot. My original plan, I got to go kind of backwards here, was to camp on the course.
Yeah.
To camp with a canopy on the course. So because I knew last year going to the RV so much, it really hurt me. So I said, oh, I got that fixed. I borrowed a tent from somebody. I didn't have one. I open up this tent. The roof is not there.
The roof was not there?
The roof, the canopy that goes on top, the frame was there. Took it out, the thing. There's no roof. So that changed everything. The RV was still there because my friend Katie was using it and I have some stuff in there, but I didn't want to use the RV because it was my arch nemesis the year before.
Too comfy.
And I wanted to be on the course because I just felt like I would get more done on the course. Because at some points you can't go. You only go one way. You wake up out of your tent. You can't go opposite you have to go the long way, go check with the thing and come back, you know? So it kind of forces you to do more in sort of a sense. So I just thought, well, I guess I'm going to be in the RV. First, Lisa had some space. I set up a chair there, but I didn't think I could sleep there. Her tent's really small, so only one person can sleep in there. So I said, oh, I guess I'm going to have to sleep in the RV when it's time to sleep. And so that really, and so you see already in the first day, I mean, the race hadn't even started. And I was already mentally, I had a plan and it already went to crap.
Yeah. So
and now I'm trying to read.
So I'm curious too. You said, you know, Lisa, who's been on the show as well, she was down there setting up a tent and you said they were along the course. So can you paint that picture? Like when you say along the course, you actually mean, I think, right there on the start finish shoot, you can set your tent or your pop up or whatever it is you're doing. You can go right along the actual start finish shoot.
Correct. So you drive on the trail. The trail is like a road. So imagine you're driving down a road, and on the right side there could be a canopy with all your supplies and you're like an aid station type, your own personal aid, like people set up at normal trail races, like at the start finish. It's like a start finish line area. But it's where you're going to stay. You can park your car there, but you're not. If you park your car, you can't move it once the race starts. So you can park your car on the course, a tent, canopy, whatever you want. You can put it right there on the course. So you're passing back and every loop you do, you're passing by it. So it's like a tent city. You know, I know people are familiar with tent cities that you see. It's kind of like that, but and it's light, it's music, it's just whatever you want to do in your area. That's what it is. And you know, Lisa's famous for having the fireballs at her tent. So it's everything. It's everything. And then everybody shares their, like, I didn't have a lot of goodies and everybody has like their own aid station. There's like, hey, free for all. And so if you need something, come get it. I can help you. It's really nice.
And I would imagine you guys in the 100-hour race, since you're, so I think the 100-hour, right? You're there first.
Yes.
And you're also there after all the other races have finished. So you guys span the entirety of the long weekend and see everybody else both start and finish time-wise. And then you've got a little bit, I think there's like a, what is it, 4 or 5 hours after the...
From 9 to 1.
Yeah, so you guys start alone and finish alone. So I would imagine you guys get the prime spots right up front on the trail, right? And others are in a field or somewhere close by, but
yes, it's got a lot of space, so it's pretty. I would be hard to say there's not a bad spot, you know. Like there's a lot of, we do get the ones that are right up close, but now with the change of the course, it really added a whole nother dynamic. Now the course passes by where the RVs are, so you could literally step, because before I had to walk, you know, a quarter mile to my RV and a quarter mile back. It felt like it might not have been that actual far, but every time I went to it, and now it's basically right off the course. And so it's really nice the way they got it now. And yeah, it's a lot of space out there.
Yes. Super comfy. If you want to just jump in it on your way out or back, right? That's really nasty. I think that's mental challenge 101 right there. Just trying to avoid that for 100 hours. Or as long as you can. I think that's the whole aspect of this genre of racing, I think, but particularly Jackalope, though, because I don't know if other races have much in the way of that. But yeah, I think that's one of the things for me that makes Jackalope different, that the amount of on-course camping and availability to jump on in and out of your own camping area, whatever you have set up, I think is really difficult mental challenge that somebody like me, not doing this before, might not anticipate going in.
Correct.
Yeah. Really cool, though. So, and I think you talked about this a little bit before with the cone, and I want to say, I think Lisa was talking about, like, there's a fancy dress hour, something like that. So what are the things that really stand out aside from the ability to jump in your RV at any given time? You know, what makes Jackalope stand out, even among timed races?
Yes, so many unique things. I have a couple of stories that I can tell, and they're not super long. And you got to catch me my stories sometimes are like trees. They have a bunch of leaves and a bunch of branches. So sometimes the branch goes way off course. If you catch me doing that, just pull me back real quick. So we got, I tell you, the first year how I met Lisa, I was volunteering before I did my 24 hours, and she had posted a video on TikTok or something. And it was like, ABC, it's I don't know the exact song, but that's how I met her. I was like, hey, you're kind of famous. You had that famous rap song. And she was just talking about the course, right? And how it's just mind is just getting you the wind, the weather, the this, the that. So that's how I had met her. So there's one thing that really I liked this year, I got to be a big part of, that I really enjoyed, was everybody goes together. We tell everybody knows what everybody's doing. So it's like, hey, this is my 100K loop. So then it's a party. Everybody gets a beverage, whatever it is, whether you can get a beverage, it could be a Coke, it could be a beer. A lot, most people choose beer, Fireball, and we go together. So we can celebrate each person's, you know, milestone as they go, each 100K, then it's the 100 mile, you know, just like at each person. So it's a group of us going out and going around together. And that's really something special about it. There are some crazy things. Like last year, the ruckers, they're rucking. I mean, they're carrying 20, 30 pounds. Every time when they got to that cone, they did 5 pushups.
Oh, man.
We had people doing, like, I think Tommy did 100 miles plus 5 pushups every loop.
With their pack on or with their vest on? If they were doing weighted vests?
Yes. This crazy stuff like that. And I met a young man who set the course record last year. And with like 283 miles.
Oh my gosh.
Super humble, nice guy, Nick. He was towards the end of the race, just having a good time. Everybody knows him. I mean, usually when the leader that's leading a race, only a few people are ever going to see him, right? They get out in the front, they're done. Well, we're all, from the last person to the first person, spending time with this guy and hanging out with him, having a good time. He actually did two things that I will never forget. One was towards the end of the race, he's like, somebody dared him to run a lap with the weighted vest. So he puts on this weighted vest and runs a lap, and I'm probably like a 7-minute mile or something. It was just, and he's probably over 200 miles into this. and he does that. So that was kind of a cool thing. Then another local runner, Regina, came to the race. She wasn't in the race or anything. She just coming to support someone, I believe. And they're like, they know she's pretty speedy. They're like, hey, and he's 250 something miles. This might be the last day. Hey, race him.
Oh.
So they had a race. And Nick actually won the race.
With the
even
vest.
Even though he had X amount of, yeah, with the vest. So it was just, there's things that these ideas that come up for every year, there's some new idea. Hey, let's do this or let's do that. And it's just, there's always something crazy where the 100 milers are thinking of. And as you mentioned, at 9 o'clock on Sunday, the last day when everybody else is gone, there's the 100 milers from the year one started it. Tradition where they're going to do a beer loop. Everybody grabs a beverage and they're all together. Everyone gets together and they do one loop, 9 o'clock loop together after everybody leaves, kind of just messing around. And this last couple years, at least the 2 years I've been at it, I don't know what happened the first year, but there's an obstacle course. So at 7IL Ranch where this is at, it's a horse ranch and they have where they train horses to jump over this.
Oh, yeah.
Jump on it. There's like an obstacle course for the horses. Well, the runners will get out on course and start doing the obstacle course. And there's always, and it's fun. Like, you know, to get out there, I done a little bit of it last year. Then they have this, like a barn saloon where you go through these doors and they always have these pictures where us all coming through these doors and it's like a saloon. And so that's one of the things that's really kind of fun. It's just so, it's so fun being out there, you know, being with everybody and having a good time. And, of course, that's me. I like having a good time, and then you get in and make some goals as well. But those are a couple of the new things that I can think about.
That sounds incredible. Yeah, I mean, totally different to anything else I would have done race wise. I think. Now you mentioned in passing the weather. I think as far as I know, 7IL Ranch. I've been out there once or twice. It's pretty exposed out there.
Yes.
And I think so Jackalope is what, I'm going to say end of February, something like that, time frame wise?
The middle of February normally, yeah.
So, I mean, is it cold out there? I mean, does the weather impact what you're doing? I mean, I imagine we're in Texas, yes. But you're in central Texas over there, and I would think it's pretty chilly while you're doing this. Is that fair or no?
It is very fair. And the fair thing is, it's just like anything in Texas. Everybody says, if you come to Texas and you lived here and you know the weather, well, if you don't like it, wait till tomorrow and it'll be different.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's exactly what happens at Jackalope. So this year, super hot the first day. We're sweating, having a hard time. And then day three, we're all bundled up because it's freezing. And then the wind's blowing like 30 miles an hour. And then it's a dang weather roller coaster. This year, just like last year, a windstorm came through and tore up a couple of canopies. My canopy was a victim the first year I did the 100, and several of them flying all over the place because windstorms came. It rained. It didn't rain as much this year as it did last year. It just rained like a bad, bad storm. It was really terrible. That's when I was happy I had the RV. But yeah. It was a bad storm out there. But the weather is very unpredictable. It seems like, I don't know, I think the race director picked this week on purpose. Like he knows this is the week where the weather is going to give you the most challenge we want them to experience. Or, and some people may say, training for another. You could train for any race there because you're going to get the cold. I mean, we were in the 30s one night. Then we were in the 80s one day. Then we got wind and we got rain. You name it, we had it. And that can be somewhat, you got to pack everything, you know. Yeah. And if you didn't, then you could be in a whole nother hurt.
Fortunately, you're only ever, what now, two miles away from coming back to your setup and adding a layer or taking off a layer, I guess. But yeah, very challenging for sure. So when you're out there, Chris, for you specifically, you're out going around the cone of death and doing your push-ups and coming back. How do you stay motivated when you're like that? Because that's some really challenging mental stuff going on right there. I mean, that's difficult. What did you do for motivation?
Yeah, for me, I have a bad habit of being really good when I have people to talk to and just talking about life and learning. And I love people. I love seeing them succeed. And so that really keeps me motivated, talking to other people, hearing about what they got going on in their life. And You know, a lot of times it's trail therapy out there, and that's really a love language of mine that it really keeps me motivated. But then you get into the dark place, and then I don't talk, I don't say, because I got a blister, my feet are killing me, I don't want to be out here, the RV's right there, I can just go back. And so then when I start getting to that point, it's really, I like to lean into music a little bit sometimes. And for me, you know, I remember at a tough time in my life, you know, I was divorced about 8 years ago, and that's what got me into running, actually. And about 6 months before that, my dad passed away. And so when that happened, my life changed. Mm-hmm. And during that process, going through the divorce right after my dad, just all this was all within it felt like a year or two altogether. It felt all like, now it feels like all, it was all happening at the same time. And when it did, some friends invited me to church. And I never went to church really in my life, and it wasn't a thing that I did. And, you know, long story short, I don't want to give a sermon, but God found me at that point. And so when he found a broken person, as broken as I was at that time in my life, when I'm in this race and I get to that low point, I just try to remember I'll put on some worship music.
Oh yeah.
And I'll listen to that and remind myself, if I made it through that trench in my life, that this few miles or this little bitty blister or whatever it is, it's nothing, you know, like, hey, this is nothing, Chris, you gotta keep pushing. I probably don't dig deep enough, because that's what I'm still learning. I believe it's still a learning process, but my faith usually pulls me, it at least starts to get me getting in the right direction, getting my mind right, you know, because we all know it's mental. I used to think, because I, you know, had a rough upbringing as a child, you know, nothing crazy, but just like,
yeah,
it was, you know, it wasn't financially great and all those kind of things. And so I'm like, you know, I thought, because I was a blue collar worker growing up and my dad was blue collar, that, oh, I'm tough, I'll do ultras, that'll be easy, I get in a tough spot, I'll just remember how tough I am. Hey, this is way tougher than just having a tough childhood.
Yeah, it's difficult out there, that's for sure. Now, we talked about some of your challenges and just generally the difficulties, I guess, of doing a timed race, especially when your camp is so close by. But let's flip the script just a little bit. From your 200 hours, and maybe even the 24 hour, because that's nothing to sneeze at either. Are there any moments that really stand out for you that are kind of moments you look back on with pride, or, you know, with great joy on those moments? Like, hey, I managed to do this, or I was really pleased with whatever it was. Do you, you know, is there any sort of prideful moments from the past couple of years?
Yeah, the one that comes to mind first is probably from the 24 hours, because I'm brand new. I think I can give the perspective of someone brand new coming into the sport, because I've only been doing ultras for a couple of years. And at that point, I was really, really new. And so I remember getting back from, I had done straight 30 miles, and it was raining the whole time. Terrible rain. I did not have the jacket I had, I thought was waterproof, was not waterproof.
Oh man, that sucks. Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah. I listened to a lot of David Goggins. I was like, who cares? I'm just going to run through it. You know, and my mindset was just different at that time. It was just like, just go, just go, just go. So mm-hmm. I just kept on going, going, going. Well, my wife and her sister meet me at the tent at one of my breaks. And they're like, how many miles you had? And I think I was like at 20 something. She goes, have you changed? It's so terrible out there. It's raining and the wind's blowing straight. Because it was literally, the rain was blowing in my eyes, like straight like this. That's how hard the wind was blowing with the rain. And she was like, you got to be, how good is that jacket? So she says, well, just change your clothes. You'll probably feel a little bit better. And so I take off my clothes. When I take them off and I hold it, I'm like, holy moly, this clothes are wet. I was drenched and I didn't even really wasn't thinking about it. So I put on dry clothes. I finished. Well, at the end of, I started getting really, you know, just, I'm at about 34, 33, whatever miles I was at. And another son-in-law showed up to help me. He brought some dry stuff. I had brought me some socks, some other stuff. When he got there, I really just got kind of in a low. And it's the first time I had been in something like this. Cause this is, again, it's a 24 hour timed race. But I have plenty of time. It's like 10 o'clock at night, you know, and I didn't really set a goal that time. I just thought I was going to go the whole time.
Yeah.
And then I really got in my head and I was like, I'm done. I don't want to do anymore. I want to go to sleep. So he let me go to sleep. I went to, changed and dry stuff, went to sleep. But I remember I was right across the, my tent was right across from the start line. So the noise was all the music and everything. I could hear it all night. When I woke up in the morning, this was the proud moment. I thought, I had never done this in my life. I thought, wow, I just ran and my legs were so sore. I would, you know how you get them tired. I'm just like, I could barely move, getting out of, cramped up. Yeah. I could barely get out this, off this cot. I was just having a hard time moving. But then I looked out the window and I see people going back and forth. And I'm like, well, if they can do it, I wonder if I got anything left. I wonder if I could do any more. And that I was really proud that I got dressed and told them, hey, I know I only have a couple hours left before the 25 is up, but I'm going to go see if I can do, if I can get out there and do something, anything.
Brilliant.
And so that was a really proud moment because I got up and got my butt out and really went out there and did some more. And so, and I didn't, I'd only did a couple of races before that. And when I was done running, I was done for 3 days, you know? And now here I was, get up in the morning and get back out there and start moving. And the crazy thing was, after you start moving, it's almost like, oh, your body wakes up and says, oh yeah, you can, you're good to go. Too bad you didn't sign up for 48 because you got some more left in you. So I kind of left there. That's probably what a little bit itched my brain, like, wow, I could do more. And so that was a pretty proud moment.
It's funny how that happens, isn't it? When I mean, that's definitely happened to me in races before too, you know, long races where you start walking after a break and you think, God, my legs are so tight. There's no, I'm going to have to walk this whole thing from here and it's going to take forever. But I've learned to sort of at least try to run because you never know. To your point, once your body kind of gets back into the swing of at least walking and you might, okay, I'm going to try a short, shuffly jog. And then lo and behold, you're able to do a shuffly jog and you're like, oh, I might be able to do that for just a shade bit longer, you know? And before you know it, you can run, walk again, and suddenly you're off and going. But I think a lot of people, I don't know if it's, I would call it a mistake, but I think a lot of people kind of feel that pain and just sort of stop and don't try to run again. And I think you're right in that
right.
There's definitely something there. Your body adapts. And once you try to run again, all right, you're not running maybe an 8 or 9 or 10 minute mile, but you can still move. And really any kind of jogging movement coupled with walking is going to boost your speed way up there. So yeah, I think that's right for sure. So from all of your Jackalope experiences, are there any takeaways that you learned about yourself that you're like, yeah, I'm definitely wanting or looking, or maybe you already have brought that into races that you're going to run or have run since you started doing Jackalope? Like, what did you learn about yourself from Jackalope that you can translate into future running?
Yeah. So with this, you know, again, I didn't give Jackalope the credit it deserved either year. And this year was even more of that. I want to do longer races, like with shorter times. But I really am starting to figure out from doing Jackalope, I think it really can help you figure out where you want to go next. Like, what do I want to do? Do I just want to do these timed races and have a good time and also meet a goal because it's a good balance? Or a lot of people have treated these races like we have three people that I know offhand, Tommy, Nick, and I think Andrew, all use this for training for them to all complete Cocodona. They all did over 200 miles because you can practice what you would do. Yes, not the exact terrain, but you can practice the nutrition, the staying on the course, doing the mile. And they all did 200 miles and they all completed Cocodona because Cocodona is a few months from now, right?
Yeah.
And so that's very similar to what I had planned. Now that kind of fell through for me because I signed up for Cocodona, but then I pulled back. I wasn't training right or whatever, but so maybe next year. But it has really taught me that I want to use these timed races to build my mental strength so I can do longer races. Because if I can go to this time race, and let's say I'm signing up for one, it's called the Sticks. It's a 72 hour and it's at the end of May. And I don't remember exactly where. I know it's up north a little bit. But I'm signing up for that.
That's Ultraverse, right? That's Chase and Casey. Ultraverse, the Sticks. Yeah.
maybe.
Yes,
correct.
Kansas, somewhere around there.
Yes, yeah. A friend of mine, Katie, signed up for it. When my friends sign up for things, I'm always like, hey, that sounds interesting. And so at first I was going to do possums, but then I really just thought, man, I want to get this time because my mental, I'm not there yet. Like a lot of people say, oh, aim big. And if you don't reach it, but I kind of want to use this as a progression. If I can do 100 miles in 72 hours, I'm making some progress, you know, and then there's Snowdrop.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to be on a relay team. That one's 55 hours. If I can do 100 miles in 55 hours, so I can start building towards, you know, actually doing a hundred mile race in a regular, you know, straight through. And these timed races are really can help you fine tune all those things. That's really what I think it helped, especially me. What's helped me being a beginner. I wish I would have tackled this right away from the beginning because I met a guy who had this year, I think his name's Ralph. He'd only done a half marathon. He did 100 miles.
Oh, wow.
And he hated it because I walked with him. He hated it. He was like, this is terrible. I don't know why I'm doing it. But once I started doing it, I was like, well, I might as well keep going. Now. Well, you're here for four. I already paid. I'm here for 4 days. I might as well keep going because I got talked into this. He goes, I like rock climbing. I like to climb on rocks. I don't even like running. I don't. And at the end of it, I told him, man, you think you're going to do it again? Because he was saying no the whole time. At the end, he said, man, I might have to do something like this again. it just captures you. I don't know what it does to you, but it gets in there. And it's like I believe all the people around and how much support it is. You're passing everybody hey, good job. Hey, let's go. Hey, keep going. How you doing? You get to see somebody's face all the time. And that's really, it really helps you move.
Yes. Well, I'm really glad you're signing up for the Sticks. Those are friends of mine up there, Chase and Casey, who run that, and they run an excellent race as well. So hopefully you can bring, and maybe even Katie too, if she's going, you guys can bring like a flavor of Jackalope up to the Sticks and kind of bring some of that. I'm sure they would love that if they're listening. Look for those Jackalopers because they're a crazy bunch out there.
Because Katie talked me into it. It didn't take much to talk me into things, obviously, but she talked me into it. And then I didn't want to do it. Then I did want to do it. I'm very overthinker is what I am mostly. And so she told me the reason she wanted to do it. She goes, it's a very similar community to Jackalope. She says what she's heard is really tight because one of her friends had told her about it. So it was like, I think that person had done Jackalope before as well. I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but so yeah, maybe. I don't know if there's a cone out there or not, but
I don't know if they have a cone, but I think you guys should find one or put a stick in the ground or something, you know, like mark a tree.
Hey, a stick. That's a great idea.
Bring a stake. I'm not sure. Yeah. But so, Chris, you touched a little bit on the community there just as you were talking. How much does that play a part, the community of the race, and then also support crew? Did a lot of people have an actual crew with them, or were most people doing Jackalope kind of solo with their own tent? And for those folks that did have a support crew, and I'm not sure if I think you mentioned maybe 1 year you might have or all 3 years maybe you guys have gone down, but what kind of impact does having a support crew on a race like this have versus perhaps a standard ultra race where, you know, they're meeting you every 10 miles or whatever down the road?
Right.
You know, is it different, and did it help or hinder you if you or other folks in the race had a crew? Do you feel like it helped or hindered?
I would say that for this particular race, and I'm not sure if it's the same at all timed races, this is the only one I've done, is that most people don't have a crew because we are each other's crew.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense at all. We really team up and we talk about this months before. We're already talking about now. We all signing up next year, most of the crew, and more people we've been recruited in to do it again. And so we're kind of like each other's crew. Now, there's usually some people that come help set up. Like I know Lisa had her dad came, and even though I said, hey, I got it, I can help, he loves to come to the event. So he came and helped her set up. I met a young lady named Misty. Her husband came help set up. But for the most part, people don't have – we're using each other. You know, there's usually a group of people. Even the guy that I said that didn't run but a half marathon, he had two other friends that were there they all got kind of talked. One guy wanted to do it. He invited his two friends, so they're all together. So it's really the community is actually your crew for the most part. It's 100 hours. It's 5 days that you're out there. So it's kind of hard, I guess, for most people to take off. I know Steph, her husband, she has, I believe, 4 kids, and she watches them, and husband has to take on the duty while she's out there, you know. So she comes prepared with everything that she needs. So mostly like self-supported, I would say. Most is self-supported. I can't remember anybody having someone there the whole time at all, you know.
I may have to go look it up too, but do you recall, were there many out-of-staters, or was Jackalope kind of pretty much folks in and around Texas?
Mostly Texas, but when it gets into the other distances, I will say I've seen quite a few people from other states, but most of the people, I believe, are from Texas.
Yeah. Well, we do have to answer, Chris. Hopefully we've convinced somebody out there to go sign up for this, because I think it's a fantastic race. And obviously Chris has done it 3 times, and he wouldn't have done that if he didn't think it was a fantastic race. But, you know, we do have to answer the question, Chris, why would somebody consider adding this to their list of must-do races?
My answer to that question is you want to add it because you're going to walk away with a new family. Definitely going to walk away with a new family of friends and ultra runners. If you're new to it, like I was, I walked away with 15 best friends. It's something that us and interaction with other human beings, I think, is one of the most important things to have. And you share. Trust me, there's some deep conversations on the trail when you spend that much time together. And you're going to meet all paces because you're on this short track. For me, that's what it is. You're going to, and I think most of the trail community is this way. Like, they love the community of the people. And you can't get more community than hanging out with somebody for 100 hours. Your best friends. You know every in and out about them after that's over with. So for me, if you want to, especially if you're, the funny thing that I thought was, I'm at this table with these people before this dinner, and we're talking about extrovert, introvert. I'm extrovert, and I ask each one of them, they're all introverts. I would have never have known it. They get out of their comfort zone, and they're at these races, and I never would have known it. And it brings something out of you that, you know, it's so crazy. If you've never walked more than 13 or ran 3 miles, you could go there and do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you're with other people, you're going to go farther. I promise you, you're going to go farther than you ever thought you could. Everybody does it there. They go farther than they ever thought they could.
Maybe that's why Lisa keeps bringing the fireball, right? To get all those introverts juiced up a bit while they're out on the course. That's why we have the beers there, I'm sure. Get everybody going.
Right, exactly.
Get everyone going a little bit. I think you're spot on there. One of the really cool things to think about and consider, especially for back of the pack folks that might be listening, like you and I, how often do you get to run a race where you're running essentially with the elite people for a massive extended period of time? And you were talking about this earlier, and I was like, yeah, that's really unique. That's not just Jackalope, but certainly these kind of races allow you to be in and around elite people for a long time. And I don't think that exists in any other sport. I'm struggling to think of another sport where you get to hang out and participate and race or do the activity with the elite people and build a relationship with those individuals and get to know them a little bit, and they get to know you. So, yeah, I think you talked about the one chap, was it Nick? You know, just as an elite guy, you're able to have this conversation, and maybe they remember you after that.
Yeah, he definitely, Nick was definitely is that guy, because he actually approached me. I won't forget, because I know he's a leader. He's doing his thing, and I'm at the cooler, and he goes, hey, how you going? How you know, doing 100 hours? Like, yeah, and we just started chit-chatting, and we still talk to this day. I mean, they're out there doing a race today, matter of fact, that Grasslands 100, but he's been in contact. Everybody stays. It just, my friends group blew up after Jackalope. I'll tell you that for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm just thinking out loud, but I would love to find a way to go down there and do the podcast. I should do a podcast episode live during the race. I should sign up for one of the races and then do the podcast live during the race. That'd be kind of fun. I think
that would be
absolutely.
I think that would really be fun. You know, I will tell you, three people that are really good friends, I met them at the first Jackalope, and two of them, I met a young lady, Rebecca, And then I met Lisa and I met Katie for a short amount of time last year. And Katie and Lisa are who I share the most miles with because we don't live too far from each other, you know, and my most training with. And it's all from Jackalope.
Yeah.
You know, like all these people from Jackalope. I talked to Rebecca a lot, and she actually shared my 100-mile loop with me before I knew there was a celebration 100-mile loop last year. She shared it with me, and I wasn't very smart. I took off running, but I took off running. The reason I say it like that is because she goes, "Oh, I'll do this last loop with you." I said, "Okay, I'll let's go." So I went. I didn't want to tell everybody. I was still not feeling like I was part of the group yet, so I didn't tell anybody it was my 100-mile loop. I just went. She heard me, so she went with me. Then about halfway through, she's like, "I'm tired. I can't run anymore." So she walked, and then when I came back, she took a picture. I used that picture forever, and that was my 100-mile loop.
Brilliant
picture. And then this year, to tie it together, she did her first 100K, and she was the same thing happened. She was coming, but this time I didn't forget. She was coming back. She goes, "Hey, I'm going to be doing the 100K because she was doing the 48 hours. She goes, "I'm about to hit 100K. I said, "Okay." So she came back around. I stopped and waited. When she got back up, caught up to me, then I finished it with her so we could celebrate it together, because I remember she thought about me when it was my turn. So I wanted to make sure I returned that favor. And that's just part of the Jackalope spirit right there. But we're always thinking about each other.
Brilliant. And I think you mentioned while you were out on the trail, you like to go down to music. Now, one of the things we do, Chris, as part of the show here that you might be aware of if you've listened to any of the episodes, we definitely like to encourage guests to pick a song to add to the free Spotify Choose to Endure playlist that's floating around there. Usually it's something to kind of lift you up or motivate or just keep you moving for exactly that reason while you're out doing infinite loops around the cone of death for 100 hours. That would be a great time to tune in. So we do like to ask guests, Chris, did you have a song that you wanted to add? And if so, what was it? And why does that song resonate with you?
Well, there's a... Music is my thing. I love it. It really talks to me a lot, and I like to use it to motivate it, get me out of a hole. Sometimes it just, I don't know what it is. It seems like going through my life, I can look at this music, oh, I was going through this, and this music, I was going through this, and this music, I was going through that. So during this, and I kind of mentioned it earlier a little bit, so I'm going to kind of repeat some of it a little bit. But for me, it's worship music, and there's this song called Graves to Garden, Garden to Graves. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, which way it goes, because now I'm a little nervous about saying it. But it's Elevation Worship, and it just reminds me again that I need to be reminded a lot of times that I'm worth more than I think I am, and that I'm capable of more than I think I am. And I think when I dig into that music, that it really reminds me of that I'm there's a bigger something bigger than me. And so it really pulls me out and reminds me of, you know, sometimes we just need a reminder, whatever you choose to be your reminder, that you're capable and you're okay. Yeah. You're okay. Hey, you know, this is just a little bitty race. Let me dig me out of this hole. And for me, that's uplifting, because it really is gut-wrenching in my heart, because I know, you know, the sin I've committed, and I know the bad things I've done in my life, and I'm still here, and I'm still smiling, I'm still moving forward. So it just reminds me that, hey, just keep on plugging along and let's go. For a second, I know you probably don't want two of them, but for a second, man, Run DMC, man, come on.
What?
Run DMC, Rockbox.
Those are two different ends of a scale, but they're awesome. Good job.
I told you, yeah. I am a very diverse music, but when you put on that old school rap for me, especially some Run DMC, I get in a whole nother, that is more my, I got to be careful when I put that on, because that's when, you know, this guy that runs a 13-minute mile might run an 11-minute mile, and then it might burn me out. It might burn me out a little bit.
So different music, you know, for different needs, right? And yes, so I think, Chris, yes, you're going to really like next week's episode, because I've, you know, talking to folks in this segment on each of the interviews we've done on the show here, people were very much like you just are. They really feel the music. So I had to sit down and put some thoughts down. So next week's episode is actually all about music in ultras and using how you can use music potentially as an active part of your training and race day strategy above and beyond just sticking on a tune, which helps in a moment. But I think music could be a really important and quite unused tool for your whole strategy. So anyway, next week is all about music. So definitely listen to that one. But nice. I agree. I think, I like some Run DMC. I like a bit of LL Cool J, a little bit of Ice Cube, some Run DMC.
Yes.
Those, I like to tell people, those really resonate. When you're listening to Ice Cube, it doesn't really hit home too much when you're sitting in a village in a field in Macclesfield over in the UK. It doesn't quite hit home as hard, the messaging, but still great tunes, you know.
Yes, definitely.
Well, Chris, thank you so much again for joining us today and walking through your stories for us and telling us why you think, and me too, that folks out there should, especially back of the pack folks, should definitely consider signing up for these types of races. I hope Chris's Jackalope stories have encouraged you, listener, to get over to the, I think it's Trail Racing Over Texas website. And
yes,
consider signing up to this like super interesting, really different race experience to some degree that's still evolving. And you get to go and participate in it. You get to become part of that legendary Jackalope Jam community of individuals. And we say thanks to Chris, but thank you, listener, as well, for spending some time with us today. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. And that way you'll get notified every time a new episode comes out. And of course, if you choose to do so, follow, share, review, and maybe go tell an ultra friend to listen. That way we can get all this knowledge and experience out into the ears of other individuals who might find a use for it. Doing any of those things really helps with the algorithms too. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook and over at choosetoendure.com. And now we're also over on YouTube as well, if that's where you listen to things. So be sure to head over to any of those and check us out. Say hello, tell a friend, drop us a message, a topic, or some feedback if you have a moment. Really love getting those interactions. So thanks for sticking with us today. Until next time, run long, run strong, and keep choosing to endure.
Thanks for running with us at the Choose to Endure podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. We had a blast. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. Keep racking up the miles and the stories, and we'll catch you at the next trailhead. Until then, remember to run long, run strong.